Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tran. Hello, Han. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Doing great. Yourself?
Not too bad. Obviously, we hope that all the individuals and listeners that have been involved with and affected by the latest set of storms are doing okay and hopefully bringing life back to more normalcy. Tonight, we're really going to talk about we like to call it the elephant in the room, money. Now, the biggest thing that makes everything work and everything come together is that unique little currency called the dollar. Now we've got today's discussion is going to really go over all aspects of funding the dollar on what you would get involved in. And this has to do with whether it's dealing with a renovation or a new build. Obviously, this is episode number 5, and if you'd like to call in and ask either Han or myself a question, feel free. It's 657-383-1442. We'll gladly answer that question, and if we don't have the answer, we'll endeavor to find it.
We'll find it.
Without a doubt. Back to the discussion about these costs and what they are. Some of them are unique to a remodel or unique to a new build, but there are some that are very similar for both kinds, so it's germane to both types of projects. And a lot, unfortunately, most dentists don't even know they have to pay. And that's the scary part, what we like to call the elephant in the room, because those kind of things kind of jump up and bite you. And unfortunately, it's too late down the process once you've already started, and you've effectively are stuck having to pay whatever these particular costs might be. And we're going to go through those, and we're going to go through how best to prepare for these. So with that, we've got actually a very extensive list of things that we want to talk about tonight. First of all, on the agenda is talking about funding. Now, obviously, remember back to previous episodes, we talked about the team members that were important to the core when you pull your project together, and one of those was your accountant. Other was your banker or your lending institution. Now, funding has a lot of things involved in it, and we're not going to discuss that in depth other than to discuss the three main parts. How are you going to fund this particular project, whatever you've decided to do? Obviously, you've gone through the process we've talked about before. You've created your program. Your program has initiated whatever your design needs to be for today's work with potential for future work. And hopefully you've got some resemblance of an idea of what that cost might be. It hasn't been refined, but at least it gives you an idea. And now you've got to parlay that, lay that against and compare it against, okay, what can I afford and how can I make this work? Well, your building, if you have an existing building or if you have existing land, there's equity in that land or that building. So obviously that plays into what we're talking about. Han, we've seen that many times before where a client has used their land that they already own as the necessary down payment, correct?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's crucial because a lot of times we've had projects that dentist has taken and purchased two or three times more property than what they physically needed for their project, on the anticipation that they're going to then utilize their piece and then potentially sell it off, sell off the remaining piece or build on it in the way of a investment property so that it helps towards the funding of the particular project that they're trying to do. And then obviously you've got your savings. Savings is an item that we all know is something we should have, and you'd like to accomplish as much of that as possible. But you have to be real careful about tapping into that savings, and that's where you would really bring in the expertise of somebody like Mike Montgomery over at Ligavo Bank, which, by the way, for a commercial for him, on October 30th, our October 30th show, we'll be having a live interview with Mike Montgomery from Live Oak. He'll be part of the show and available to answer all your questions. He'd be a great one to talk to about how much you should have in savings, what you should keep in there, and how you best should utilize that savings. And then, of course, there's the construction loan, the final financing loan, to be able to do your project. Again, Mike is a perfect person to talk with about that, and we're going to go through that with him on the 30th. So let's step into the two major costs of a project budget. Now, the project budget is really what is the overall complete out-of-the-pocket cost that we have to prepare for when you decide to do a particular project. Well, first on that list is soft costs. And there's an extensive list of them. One of the scariest and most obtrusive is all those nasty little fees. On, we can talk about things like development fees. We just had a project that came up that unfortunately the dentist wasn't prepared for.
It's environmental impact fee, Jim. That's become a very common fee across the country. I do believe it's originally out in California. Down in Florida, that had become a burden on a lot of new projects from the ground up project as well. The project that Jim talked about, it was I think it's around $57,000 impact fee that our client was not was not planning for. There's a number of other fees that involve in bringing water and electricity and all that stuff to the site too. That especially if you have a piece of land.
We call those tap-in fees.
And so those things can get pretty substantial. I don't know if permitting fees is part of the soft fees. I think soft fees is just strictly involved in.
Permitting costs, permitting fees, basically the fee that you pay to the local building department to get your permit is a soft cost. That falls under the soft cost classification, along with fees that you put into your zoning application. You have to go through a zoning process, and there'll be a fee for them to do the plan review, zoning process. They'll put a fee in there. Now, these fees can vary from small amounts in the few dollars to, like Han just related, into the thousands of dollars. And the responsibility,
in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, that's true, the tens of thousands of dollars. And the responsibility for identifying these fees falls into the lap of several people from your team. When it comes to things like environmental cost fees, zoning application fees, tap-in fees, those pretty much fall in the realm of your civil engineer. Civil engineer is the guy that deals with the site, or the lady who deals with the site, and that is their responsibility to identify what those particular fees are and to alert you, the owner of the project, what to anticipate. It's good to have them on board early so that you can identify what those fees are early. Now, there are other fees that you might get in relationship to real estate. Let's say you're closing on a piece of property and you are, you know, buying a new piece of property or you're buying an existing building. There's real estate and closing fees. Those also fall under soft costs. They're not directly related to the construction of the project, but they are fees that have to be paid. And unfortunately, it's cost of doing business, and those vary as well based upon your location around the country. There's also legal fees having to do with your attorney, another key member of your team who is going to be reviewing all your contracts, having to do with all aspects of your project. That there's those legal fees are in there, again, another soft cost. Then, of course, there's the architectural and design fees that are directly related to the work that Han and I do. Those fees are, as well, soft costs. And the way we particularly define fee is on a unique project-by-project basis, but we do have some rule of thumbs that we like to go by. Han, real quickly, do you want to just talk about those?
Yeah. Often there's not a a chart or a schedule that we go by, because every project, like Jim said, every project is unique and different. Typically, we go by the scope of services that are required on the project. If the project is the scope of the service is just strictly for a limited service and stuff like that, then we go by dollar per square foot cost. Again, our fee structure are calculated based on the services that's going to be required for the project. And that would also, a lot of time we can't simply give you how much you're going to cost to do a project without knowing what you need. Once we can identify the particular requirement on the project, then we have to we have to relay that to our consultant engineers so they can provide us with a number or cost for their for their involvement. So there isn't a defined answer. It all depends on the scope of service that you will need.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, correct me if I'm wrong, but we do not establish our fee on a system where, okay, today our fee for design work is going to be X, and it's X for everybody that calls in today by the end of the day. They're unique to the individual amount of work necessary, because we do that on purpose. We do that so that, unlike someone else who may say we're going to do a design for, $1,500 for a blocking diagram, the old bubble diagram we talked about last time, and we're going to do, $5,000 or $6,000 for a floor plan. We don't do that, because what you have to do as a business is you have to build in redundancy and extras in there, because let's say I'm working for Dr. A over here, and it takes me so many hours to get that work done. Han has to spend too much time on that, and so it costs the company a whole lot more money. And then Dr. B, he does it a whole lot quicker because everything is much more streamlined. It's a less complicated project. And so they average the two out, and so maybe Dr. A is paying for less than Dr. B is, and Dr. B is actually paying for some of Dr. A's work necessary for us to do the work. So that's why we don't set a standard dollar per project kind of work, because it doesn't really give you the most efficient and cost-effective solution to what you have. Because if you have a little bit of work, then you should pay a little bit of money. If you have a lot of work, then you should, of course, pay a higher fee because it's all based upon that. No different than the work you do with a patient. If a patient's only having one crown done today, they only pay for one crown. You don't pay for a crown and a half because the other guy is only paying for one. And so you need to augment that. So it's important. At least we feel very strongly that it's important to set our fees around that. And later on in today's discussion, we're going to talk about the actual aspect of how we go about creating those fees and what you should expect for that money. Another one of the soft costs are insurance. Obviously, there's insurances that you run into both for during construction as well as mortgage insurance and great stuff called PMI, all that other kind of stuff that has to do with the real estate. So I guess in a nutshell, it's very important that one of the questions that's asked when you're sitting down initially with your project team is to go through the process with each one of those core team members as to the fees that they anticipate for their local area. So if you're doing something in Chicago, it's going to be different than if you're doing something down in Tampa, or if you're doing something over here in Toledo, Ohio. Each one of those areas will have different fee structures, and it'll be even different within our region here in Toledo. You've got all these little municipalities around us. We have Toledo, we have Sylvania, we have Perrysburg, we have Maumee, we have White House, we have Monclova. All those areas, each one of them have different fee structures and actually go to different municipalities. Some are very inexpensive and some are very expensive. Some are very inexpensive when it comes to one aspect, and some are very expensive when it comes to only one aspect. And there's other requirements that each one of those local municipalities will throw onto the project. Again, go back to your core team, ask that particular question, make sure that you get a line item, item by item summary of those so that you could have the best chance of having no surprises and know up front what's happening with your soft costs. Mike Montgomery will talk about soft costs and how they have a way, a particular program to be able to work with that and actually be able to fund that. But typically, soft costs come out of your pocket, don't they, hon?
Yes. It's straight out of your pocket. It's not financed. And so you should have some that allow you at least the flexibility and the options to solve issues that arrive on projects. If you don't have that funding, you can find yourself in a world of hurt.
Right, and again, when I say come out of your pocket, that means that comes out of your one of those three funding things, where either you've taken an equity loan against your building or your property, whether you're coming out of your savings, or whether you've taken a loan out that allows you to fund your soft costs. But it's got to come from somewhere. And the worst business decision would be, of course, that you wouldn't want to try to do that out of your operating funds, because they can be extensive and that can be a major draw on your business when those particular bills come in. The municipalities are kind of unique too, aren't they, Han? They won't give you a building permit until you pay the fee.
It's just such a crazy, unpredictable environment when you go from one municipality to the other. Some are very, very simple, streamlined. Others are very convoluted and complicated. We work with municipality where you say, okay, I got a building I want to build, and I'm going to submit the drawing for permit review. And they give you a single sheet, and it tells you it costs you X dollar per square foot after, you know, after a certain limit, and then it's percentage. So you can figure it out pretty easy. Some would want you to have estimated costs committed or contracted with a contractor already on board, so they know exactly what your building will cost. You know, it could be, like Jim said earlier, it could be a couple hundred dollars for a 3,000 square foot building to $5,000, $6,000, or $10,000 for the same size building. So there is not a cut, clean, dry formulas. It differs from each municipality. Jim mentioned site costs and stuff like that, or zoning costs. Even if you do projects that involve only interior renovation, some municipality would ask you to fill out a certificate just to confirm that your proposed dental office, you know, is allowed to operate in that zone, district. And for that, you get a certificate and you give them a couple hundred bucks. It's a little red tape, but, you know, like Jim said, there's a lot of little soft costs. After a few dozen of those, that number can get pretty big.
It almost approaches legalized extortion. Oh, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry.
It's not
yeah, laughable, it's legal. But in reality, that's what it almost sounds like when you're new to this kind of process and don't deal with it on a day-to-day basis like Han and I do. You would think about listening to what we're talking about and going, oh, this does sound like extortion.
Oh, my. It would be nice. It is.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's simply you either do what we say or you don't get a building.
Exactly. They don't let you build your building or do what you want to do. So on to the next part of the project budget. Project budget really is comprised of this next item known as hard costs. Now, hard costs in definition is the bricks and mortar, the cost directly related to building the facility. That built facility would include all your materials and labor and the cost related to that. So anybody that's on the job doing anything from your concrete guys to the guys that are digging the foundation to the individuals that are putting in your IT work, anything and everything that has to physically do with someone being on the job doing something that would add to or actually be integrated into your building. Those also hard costs include your equipment costs. So that's all that wonderful stuff that you have to buy from, you know, Schein, Patterson, Benco, all the big boys, and all the things that you want to have custom built, from any cabinetry to unique features within your facility. All that equipment falls under hard costs. And then lastly, as part of your hard cost, are your supplies for your initial startup, but not on a month-to-month basis, on a monthly basis. Typically, that would fall under your monthly operation budget. But to be able to start up, a lot of times lending institutions will allow you to put your initial supplies under your hard cost, and at least allow you to finance, because typically hard costs are financed under the project budget, except for a few exceptions like Mike Montgomery's program, which allows you to finance both your hard costs and your soft costs.
Jim, the hard costs, furniture fall into that category.
Yes, it does.
Right?
Furniture, equipment, lights, all the little pieces and parts that you have to buy to make that facility function and work falls under what would be considered a hard cost. That includes you know, seed for the grass that's being planted outside. All that kind of stuff, landscaping trees, handicap sign that you have to put out in the parking lot, bumpers for wheel stops, even your signage that you put on the outside of the building. If you're having a flagpole put up, that all falls under what was considered a hard cost and goes into the project budget under that category. Now, there are tax ramifications for every different piece and part, and you need to go back to that core individual we talked about, your accountant, and have them integrate with you what's the best tax strategy and advantages to the pieces and parts. So, for example, most people don't know it, but you can actually have custom furniture, like, say, countertops or a front desk or cabinetry within your operatories. As long as you give it a serial number, you can have that listed as equipment and furniture within your tax structure. And it is, what's that called, Han, where they do it over a shorter period of time and a longer period of time?
Segregated? Segregation?
Yeah, and it has to do with your tax structure and what you pay with regards to taxes on a particular project. So talk with them about the best way to accomplish that. We've had it done before where a custom piece of furniture that was created for front desk has an ID number attached to it, and it's listed in the taxes as such. So you can, I don't want to call it monetize, but it's not that word. It'll come to me.
I do believe the word is segregation. Yeah, I do believe the word is segregation.
So that you can utilize those benefits from that aspect of things. The one thing that you don't run into or that you're not able to pull under hard costs is the one thing that you can do is your contractor's fees. That does fall under hard cost. And those fees are his profit and overhead and his general conditions, all those things that are necessary for the general contractor or the project construction manager with the trade contractors, for them to do their work, their profit, profit and overhead and their general conditions actually do fall under hard costs. That's the one exception to the hard costs which you're able to finance, if I'm not mistaken. I can't think of any others. Can you, Juan?
No.
Okay.
Not at the moment, John.
Right. Now you've got a project budget that's comprised of soft costs and hard costs. Obviously, our program is such that we like to identify what those soft costs are with your key members. We've talked about that. Then also you identify what your hard costs are going to be, and the way you do that is through construction costing. Now, that process in our particular program is unique. What we like to do is once you sit down and establish what your program is, we've talked about that in previous episodes. You've established what you like to do, how you want to do it, and what level it needs to be at, which includes how many operatories, what you're going to do within these operatories, all the other ancillary spaces. So we have then to define and assign a construction cost to that exercise. Well, there's a few ways to do that. You can do that with a generic cost per square foot. And that can be picked up from maybe utilizing the expertise of somebody local to your project, who did a project just recently of the same character and size, and they said, okay, in doing that, we spent $250 a square foot on that particular project. Well, then you equate that to your project. Let's say you have a project of 3,000 square feet. You take $250 a square foot times 3,000 square feet, and that gives you your estimated construction cost. Now, there's a little bit of danger in doing that, isn't there, Han?
Oh, yes. There's a lot of factor that can change that dollar per square foot pretty easily to cost you a lot of heartburn. It's an estimate. Let me rephrase that. It's more of a guesstimate than an estimate, because you really don't have anything but the square foot. That's the only fact you know, is you got a 3,000 square foot building. There's nothing else that you can use to define, to really come up with a hard line item to item cost. So yes, it's risky.
It is risky, and we found that a better solution is what we like to advocate, and that's where we create a schematic design, meaning a preliminary design that gives you enough information that you can get either a construction estimator or a construction manager or a local general contractor to give you more of a line item estimate as to what that particular project is going to be. So they have more information. With that more information, that allows them to give you a much more accurate estimate on what that cost is going to be. So they're not going to use a dollars per square foot method. They're going to use a item by item, line item estimation method, which is, okay, there's 500 square feet of wall, there's a 3,000 square feet of this flooring material, there's 1,800 square feet of this particular wall system, there's 15 outlets, there's item by item by item. Then they put a dollars assigning to that based upon what they know things cost today. They then total that all up and then give you, along with a contingency, always have a contingency at the end of this for the unknown, and they total all up, and then you have a much better estimate as to what that particular project is going to cost. And this holds true for your renovation. This holds true for a new build. It just means, for example, renovation, you don't have things like site costs typically. You don't have things like asphalt and paving and landscaping and exterior walls and that kind of stuff, unless, of course, you're doing an addition to your building. But let's say you're doing a retail center. All that's already done, and you're just going in and doing the interior portion of your building. We just finished one up here locally for one of our clients, and she basically had the end unit of a existing retail center, went in, Han designed a great layout, fantastic configuration, and the contractor is wrapping it up as we speak. And hopefully here in the next few days, she'll be beginning to see patients. That's an interior portion. The contractor took our preliminary design that Han created, gave her an estimate as to what it was. The doctor was real happy with that direction. Everything was then finalized, and then the contractor gave a hard price that she accepted, and then that's how she moved forward with building that particular project. But it's extremely important to get as much information up front as possible, because no one likes to go through the process the old way. We like to call it the old way, don't we, Han?
Hey, Jim, let me elaborate on a couple, or just interject a couple items. The Of course, everybody asks us, you know, often asks us how much it costs for our building. And Jim have already kind of expressed some of the methodology in achieving that at a preliminary or very budgetary level. You will have an approach where you come to the table with a budget, a hard line budget. You can't go any more than what you have. And so a contractor may take that, deduct what he will need to have as for profit and overhead, and then you work almost like reverse engineering. Okay.
Yeah, you work backwards.
By the end of the day, you will get what your, you know, everything on your shopping list, but the quality is dictated by what's left of that budget after everything's taken out of it for soft costs, hard costs. There is nothing for free. Okay. Even a contractor have come to you and say, you know, we have an architect on board, an engineer on board, so you don't have to worry about that. No, somebody got to pay for that, and it's usually come out of your pocket. So that method of reverse pricing gives you what you want, but the quality may not be what you expected. Okay? What Jim was talking about earlier is that we tip, because that method, you don't have anything except a budget to work with and a shopping list of what you're looking for. There is no there's no drawings of any kind that you can work from.
Right? And that's called that's called design build.
Design build.
Yeah.
Okay. It's been used successfully for numerous projects. It's one way. It's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's one of the options you have. What we typically do. Of course, you still have the same shopping list. We generate a layout that identifies everything that you need, where it needs to be, and all that stuff. And then we give. And once you say, yeah, where do I sign? This is perfect. And once we have that, then we can sit down, provide that to the contractor to do a budgetary or a preliminary cost. Because now they have information that they can work from. They have the number of you know, like Jim said, number of rooms, the number of doors, number of windows, X square footage of, you know, walls and ceilings and all that stuff. So there is a numerical factor that they can identify. I think they can safely, comfortably provide you a number that they can actually sign their name to. Now, as the project gets into further down into the design phase and the design development and construction document, all that, then all this detail get put together before you go for construction. A hardcore bid process take place so that number can become more definitive before you get into a contractual arrangement and relationship with a contractor to build from. So we typically like to go from preliminary design, get a number, so that way you know what it's the probable cost is, and then you can plan for it. You can, in fact, that would be the time where the number that you can actually give to the bank, because the bank know that if that number is preliminary, it's, you know, for budgetary purposes, and they can work up your loan, because that's one of the first things they ask. They ask that often. What's it going to cost to build this building? Do you have an estimate for us? Okay, that's where that happens. So after the preliminary stuff is done, and that's when the rubber hit the road, and we get all, it just go crazy from there.
Yeah, and we like to call that the integration of the construction management method. So you actually integrate a construction manager early on during the design process, and that individual is one of your key team members we talked about in the previous episodes, one of the core members that are part of your group, and they're giving you estimates and line by line kind of ideas on what the costings are, so that you can make educated decisions on what you're going to put into your building and how you're going to integrate systems and all that wonderful stuff that we have to orchestrate and put together to make your building work for your practice. So that construction manager method is what we advocate, because the other method, known as general contractor method, is we like to call it the old way. The old way is, okay, architect, Han, Jim, create us a set of documents, go through the whole design process from start to finish, spend all of the fee necessary to do all that work, create a complete set of working drawings that includes every aspect of the project from the little nuts and bolts down to the color of the floor. And once that set of documents is all done, then you send it out to bid with general contractors. They will look at it and give you one lump fee as to how much it will cost for that project. We also coin it the phrase hope and pray, because we create something hoping that it's within budget and praying that it doesn't come in over budget for our clients' needs. So you send it out, and whatever it is on that day, on that particular time, on whatever the bidders decide, that once they've looked at all the nuts and bolts, how much is it going to cost, then they give you your fee to do that project. And it sometimes it's going to be higher than you anticipate. Sometimes it's going to be what you anticipate. Very rarely is it lower than what you anticipate. And especially in this market, where I think I might have brought this out in our last episode, but a construction entity here in town that we work with, their chief estimator relayed to me that because of the uptick in construction activity, in the 60 or 90 days that it takes a lot of times for owners to make a decision to move forward, he has seen sometimes two or three increases in material and labor costs between that time period. So it's such a fluid, moving market that even the experts, the people who know what it costs on a day-to-day basis, which is your contractor and your contractor's estimator, can't tie this moving number down. So we cannot, as the design architectural team, even have a hope of a chance of getting that number close in these types of environments. So we really never advocate utilizing the general contractor method for construction and also estimating, because you're just opening yourself up to potentially a lot of added costs, a lot of added work, a lot of delays, because once you've gone through that process that way, then you've got to decide, do I come up with extra money? Do I decide to cut out part of the project? Do I decide to not build the building at all? I mean, all of that could be disastrous, because you just spent a bunch of money to have all this work done. Again, our system, we feel very comfortable with, and it works very well. And you know, on a day-to-day basis, or at least a week-to-week, month-to-month basis, where those construction costs are and how they're being affected by even the local economy and what you're building in. Because when it comes down to go ahead.
Go ahead, Jim.
No, I said when it comes down to it, your final cost is really going to be what somebody is willing to do that particular work for on that particular day in this particular environment. So it is a very fluid kind of scenario, and you want to make sure that you can tie your trade contractors or your construction manager down to say, okay, once I decide to do this, how long do I have before I, the cost potentially could be increased or decreased. And a lot of times they're going to say 30 or 60 days, and then that's it. Well, but it all depends. So you have to ask that question as well. What you were saying, Han?
No, I was, I forgot, Jim.
That's okay. Well, that's all right. We tend to do that. I'm sure it'll come back to us. You know, that's really how you estimate your construction cost and what's the, in our opinion, the best way of getting a handle around that. Your architect.
I remember now.
Go ahead.
I remember. Okay. When you have project management on your project, I think the plus is that they have the pulse of what's going on a day-to-day basis involving labor and costs. They can flag the team and let us know the direction that we're going and whether we need to pull back or stay on course. So that way the building is not over-designed. That way that help the entire team stay within the required and set budget. That's what I remember now. That's it.
Exactly. And because it's a constantly moving target. And especially now with everybody being busy, everything is going gangbusters. Construction costs are going up. Contractors and trade contractors are busy. It's not been that way for a while. And everybody's trying to make up. I mean, I was just stating to someone here in the office the other day, have you noticed how many new trucks do you see driving around with, Joe and Fred painting, Sam's drywall? You look at that truck, it has a brand new sign on the side of it. Those folks were in the construction trade, got out of the construction trade because construction went so bad, and now they're opening back up again and getting back into the construction trade. So you hadn't seen that for a while, and now you're starting to see it. And that's good for the economy, but also it shows that there is a real increase in the cost of what it takes to be able to get a building built. And so we need to factor that in. And it's crucial. It's crucial for us to do a good job for you to be able to have the right information as we're moving through this process. Because typically a design process, if it's a normal size project, is going to take 5 to 6 months. Well, during 5 to 6 months where the timing, except for the smaller projects, maybe it'll be less than that. But a normal size new build project is going to take 5 or 6 months of design time to be able to go from start to finish and get something that can actually begin the permitting process. Well, during that time, construction costs could change drastically. You were saying, huh?
No, I wasn't. But that's right. It's besides the cost, the time, is that because of the shortage in labor, the typical construction time for, let's say, a build-out of an interior renovation could take somewhere between 3 to 4 months. It could become 4 to 5. So it will, the shortage of labor will affect how long it take to get your project done as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that, let's jump to the next portion of, actually the last portion of tonight's topics from the aspect of, okay, what are architectural design fees? What's normal for out there? Now, we talked about already what we like to accomplish and what we like to do is we like to start off, get your program, work through that, and do a schematic design. That schematic design gives you enough information that you can then get estimates and get a much tighter dollar per square foot, or at least a much tighter project budget established, not based upon a square foot method, but more based upon the nuts and bolts, the pieces and parts that you're going to have within your facility. So there's enough information in there to do that. And Han, what we've established a simple rule of thumb that we like to go by on what that schematic design fee is.
Yes. Typically, a design, a schematic design, we typically charge $3.50 per square foot. It takes from the moment of inception to completion, we probably spend a good 35, 40 plus hours with our client. So you can take that and divide up and see what it would cost. But our preliminary design is a lot more than simply here you have seven operatories and you have a number of rooms. It will work. It is done to code. We have, all the answers, all the questions been answered. So there's not a disclaimer that says that we haven't done this or that, and it's up to you to take care of. So whether we stay on board with you or a local architect that you love, who happened to be your brother or your father, that doesn't have any dental experience, they can take it and run with it without concern.
Mm-hmm.
So that's for estimate. Okay.
That exactly. So that's our schematic design fee. Then we run into full service architectural fees, which is taking that work that's already been done, creating the necessary refining and creating the necessary design documents all the way through to construction documents that can get permitted and that will give your construction manager the ability to get hard costs, including all the little pieces and parts. And we have a fee structure set on that based upon the project type. So for a renovation for a retail center, we've established $1 per square foot, haven't we, Han?
Yeah, and we go with $13 per square foot for an interior build-out. That is for a full service from start to finish. And that's including the preliminary work. So that's if we start from the very finish with preliminary to all the way to the end, that's what we charge $13 per square foot for the entire project.
Mm-hmm.
Our fees do not include interior design services nor engineering services. So those
right.
are those are extra.
Right. We'll talk about that next. Then if you have a new build, let's say you're doing the project out of the ground, you got a bare piece of property, and you're going in and you're going to do a new build on top of that. That has a different dollar per square foot, correct?
Yes, because it requires a lot more coordination, a lot more time, a lot more involvement on our part, and a lot more drawings and details. Our fees for that is $15 per square foot from the ground up. Again, that does not include, that just strictly for the architectural services from start to finish.
Right. Now, obviously, Han has already mentioned that there will be engineering fees. Now, engineering fees are on top of those numbers, and those fees are based upon the particular scope of the work that you're doing. So let's say you have an operatory, a six operatory practice. That's going to be one fee schedule versus you have a three operatory practice or a 15 operatory practice. That 15 would take, quite a bit much more work. So the fee for the engineers, and those engineers would be everybody from civil engineer to landscaping, the mechanical and plumbing engineers, the electrical engineers, your structural engineers, and potentially environmental engineers if you're doing renovation work and those kind of things. We would send those out to get estimates for what those fees would be, and we pass that through to you without adding any additional cost to that. So if they're charging you $4,000 to do their work, that's just a line item in the invoice that goes to you that there's $4,000 for their work. We don't add any more money on top of that for administrative stuff, which is unique in a lot of cases because a lot of other organizations would, in fact, mark those up so that they're making money on top of somebody else's work. Now, we talked about the last thing in fees is interior design fees. Interior design fees are on top of all that, and a lot of times our clients like to utilize a interior designer maybe that they have a relationship with or someone local. So that's why we've broken that out as a separate line item and not included it as part of what we do.
Yeah, I mean, our work, I mean, we're very capable and comfortable with, you know, picking our colors and materials and things like that. I can talk to you about the quality, the pros and cons of every possible material out there until, you know, until you're bored to death. However, everybody have a different idea of what interior design is or about. We, you know, when we do interior design services, it's very limited to selection of materials and color schemes and things like that. If you take it to a different, more in-depth level of creating a theme, like you say, if you are a pediatric dentist office and you want to have kitty statues and figurines and trains and stuff like that, there is organization out there that specialize in that, and they will certainly love to take your money for it. And our involvement is to coordinate with them if you decide to go to that level. It is expensive when you embark into creating theme, but it's important that those, if you decided that's the direction you want to go, we highly suggest and recommend that you get them involved early on, because they can create a heck of a headache for the rest of the team if they interject their ideas later on that require more space, more revisions, more support, and things like that. So if you have that in mind, do yourself and your team a favor, bring them on board early. Let them get in and have the discussion so that everybody know what to expect.
Yeah, from day one. I mean, literally from
yeah.
Okay, day 1.5. So that, you know, you're sitting down with us on day one, and day 1.5, they're part of the team because their involvement is crucial to be able to make sure that the whole thing succeeds if they're going to be doing their job for what they're being paid for. So it's crucial, as Han brought it up. So with that, I wanted to obviously look forward to next week's episode. And actually, it's going to be a really interesting one, because we're going to be having a live interview with Dr. Bill Hunsinger, our co-founder of the HJT Design Group, a real good friend of ours, an individual we work with on a day-to-day close basis. And that will be on our September 25th show next Tuesday. And that episode is going to be titled, How Many Treatment Rooms Do I Need? So he's the guy with, 35, almost 40 years of experience in the dental world, dealing hands-on with patients on a day-to-day basis, numerous practices, has several facilities, has done multitude of projects from renovations to new builds, and he's the guy that you'd want to pick his brain when it comes to those particular aspects of treatment rooms and operatories and how many you need and what do you need within your particular time frame. So if you have an opportunity, please feel free next time to call in, and you can ask Dr. Hunsinger directly online. So also, Han, let's jump into the segment of Dental Town. What's happened this week? What was hot?
An interesting topic I encountered twice this week is a couple of dentists presented a startup practice layout, and I saw where their entrance, their door that lead directly into their business office is right through the waiting area. I've never seen it before, Apparently, they've learned it at one of their design seminars that they pay the big bucks to go to, and it become a design feature. You know, like when you go into to a doctor's office, the staff is always behind a window. You don't see them come in and out of that space. Okay, this new trend that I saw, and I hope it's not a trend. I'm hoping it's a major mistake that somebody is listening to this will change. You know, will take a different course.
Rethink that.
Yeah, I mean, majorly. Okay, burn the drawings. Where they actually they come out of the reception area directly into the waiting room. That is the only way to get in and out of that space. Okay, it's like inviting somebody into your kitchen instead of coming through the front door of your house. They go directly into the kitchen to get to, you know, the entertaining area at home. It was just wild. I've seen it once. And I thought, well, that's unusual, and they told me that they got there from a seminar, and I go, wow, who come up with this? Why were they smoking? And then I saw that again with a different design. It's like they were passing it along, okay? So anyway, it was. I'm keeping an eye on that. I'm hoping that it's not, you know, it's not gonna be something that catch on, and everybody jump on board and repeat the same blunder. In my opinion, it's a blunder. Because you want it to be a little more discreet. You don't want to have your staff come in and out of your waiting room into their office.
It's like having your patients having access to the back room of what's going on a particular day-to-day basis. I mean, how can the doctor have any private discussions and evaluations of particular patients in his or her office when those patients might be sitting right outside that door? How can the doctor be able to transfer knowledge or make directions or say we need to do this, 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 and this, and this is how I want it accomplished without that information inadvertently being given to the client the patient in the wrong way? Or the other part about it is the inefficiency for the doctor. All of a sudden, instead of seeing the patient one time, twice, depending on how they work, you're going to be seeing them two and three times because you're walking in and out of the space four or five times. You're walking in and out of the space, depending on how often you go in and out of your office. You know, it's like, you got to see Fred 12 times before you actually see him in a chair.
The whole thing is not just awkward. The whole thing is so inefficient. Okay. Is that, let's say if you are the doctor and you need to talk to your front desk people, you have to actually either call them on the phone. If you don't have an in-house communication system, you will have to go into the waiting room, to the reception window or into the door to get in to talk to them. So, yeah, you're right. It's just like, here I am, peekaboo, I'm the doctor. Or look at similar to having a discretionary exit, private exit door for the doctor, okay? It just happened to dump right into the waiting room instead of off to the side of the building. Again, what were they smoking when they did this? All right, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, if you're going to create a trend or a cutting edge trend, this is not it.
No, I mean,
right?
How do you go see patient? How do you go see Fred when George and Julie and Sam are sitting in the lobby waiting to be next in line? You either inadvertently ignore them by accident, or you spend time saying, conversing with them as you go back to try to take care of the patient that's actually in a chair. It's just totally inefficient.
In this same design that I saw, that the rule or the objective in a waiting area, the reception desk, have a total, ideally, like they have 100% visual control or monitoring ability of the entire waiting area, ideally. Okay, sometimes it's difficult to achieve, but in this particular design that was put up for critique, they actually have a physical wall that do not allow the patient to see the front desk. Okay, because they say it's the little chatter between, you know, from the patient that could disrupt the front desk from doing their work. But it wiped out everything else that you're trying to achieve, that approachability, that connectivity with your patient and stuff like that, by erecting a physical wall with a door, and the only way out of that room where the reception sits is out that door into the waiting room. Okay? It's like total weird. So anyway, that was the hot discovery this week.
Well, if they all listened to us on, you know, everything would be great, wouldn't they? Oh, well.
Don't do it. Just don't do it.
Don't do it. Well, again, thank you. We look forward to next week's show, again, with Dr. Hunsinger. And we're going to catch him and be able to get his expertise on that particular topic on how many treatment rooms do you really need. If you'd like to get more information about us and what we do, please feel free. Catch us on our website, www.hjtdesign.com. Give us a call, 866-213-1268. And with that, I'd like to sign out and obviously say good evening, and look forward to next time, Han.
And thanks for tuning in and spending your time with us this evening, everyone. And until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.